B-Pod Studios.
Listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fails under center, drops back to pass, and he's pushed and knocked down by Chase Winovich, who wins the battle on the offensive-defensive line. And there you go. Chase Winovich, the kid who went to college just down the street at the University of Michigan, has his first sack in a Patriots uniform as he absolutely destroyed Tyrell Crosby. A loss of 9 and the biggest cheer of the night from the Detroit crowd for the kid.
It was cool. But it's like anything, you know, I've talked about this before, and you know, I've always felt this way, but it's definitely emphasized here. You saw me make the play maybe on a couple occasions today, but really there's so many guys up front, and there's so many intricacies just to, like, during the game itself, just making adjustments.
Oh, boy.
All right, so there's Chase Winovich.
He's an excitable young kid, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Young Chase Winovich out of Michigan, third-round draft pick, defensive end. He had one of the 9 sacks that the Patriots had against the Detroit Lions in their 31-3 preseason win, number one, on Thursday night. It's Jim Murray and Ted Johnson, Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports. I'm Chris out today, often parts unknown. So Ted's in, and if you missed us yesterday, Ted, you and I did Felger and Maz. The defense, you know, pretty impressive. You're going to take any of this with a grain of salt. It is a preseason game, but pretty impressive overall, both sides of the ball. But you just think the mentality for this year's team going into 2019 going to be different compared to last year. Why?
Yeah, I think there's a big, if you think about this time last year, and I shared the story yesterday about how when I moved back into the area after being away for the last 8 years, last August, I'll never forget, I'm driving around and I'm listening to the Sports Hub. And I'm listening to people call in to the shows here and talk about Malcolm Butler from the previous Super Bowl against the Philadelphia Eagles. And I was like, man, that was...
Get over it, you stupid
babies.
Yeah,
I mean, that happened in February. It's August now, and they're still talking about Malcolm Butler. Fascinating. Like, but here's the thing. If you watch that team last year, it just felt like something was missing. Like, they just didn't have their stingers. Like, they just... It didn't seem like I would watch that defense, Jim. I'm not even kidding. And I just thought, man, they're playing uninspired. They're lackadaisical. They just don't want to stop the run. I didn't see the collective effort that I'm used to seeing and the sharpness that I'm used to seeing in Patriots team. And then you see the off season with Tom not going to the off season. It just felt like this team was still suffering from kind of that the hangover, the loss from the Eagles. And I think maybe how it all went down, because I think maybe if all the fans think and media thinks that they deserve an answer, believe me, the players do too. And they never got one. I guarantee you they never got an answer from Bill. And so I just think that was hanging over that team the entire offseason last year and most of the season last year. And then things at the end kind of, like, you know, were laid out for them in such a way they were like, all right, let's let that go. Let's get ourselves. We have an opportunity to kind of make up for last year, and let's get our crap together and get going. And they did, and they won the whole thing. Turn on the switch. I just think this year that they won the Super Bowl. There was no issues in the game. Like, they, you know, this franchise and the players that have been here long enough, they know how to win. They know how to handle success, right? And so this team, to me, is mentally in such a much better place and are probably just – they don't have that hangover. There's no questions. They just won a Super Bowl. They're all feeling good about themselves. And so, to me, they're just in a much better place collectively, mentally-wise, than they were last year at this time for those reasons.
Makes sense. And the other thing, too, that you pointed out yesterday is, you know, looking at this game in the preseason game, number one, Thursday night, on the defensive side of things, you could tell that they're already feeling pretty confident because of how much talent they have inside, on that side of the ball, and that there's a trust there, too. So that can help that mentality.
It's you. The defense is all about confidence. It sounds weird, but, like, when you start balling, I don't care if it's in training camp practices, I don't care if it's in preseason games. Defense builds off of its confidence and how it performs in practices and in games, even that are quote unquote meaningless. Okay, and the way they finished last year, I hearken back to 2004. I just remember that 2004 defense at training camp. We knew we were good. I mean, and we went out there and we destroyed that offense, our offense. Like, we would kick their butt in practice. And we just had this confidence that we were going to be unbeatable. I feel like this defense, the way they played, they played phenomenal at the end of last year. In the playoffs and in the Super Bowl, that there is a carryover effect because there's still a lot of the same core guys from that last year's team on this year's team, and they continue to kick butt in practice. All the reports are that they're winning most of these practices, and they go out there and they do that to the Detroit Lions. It's a preseason game, Ted, and it's the Detroit Lions. Doesn't matter. All right? That's NFL competition to them. And so they will feed off of that. And I'm telling you, and I said it yesterday, I think this has a chance to be, quote-unquote, a special defense. How does that manifest itself? I don't know. I just think they're going to be dominant in all the typical stuff that they're usually dominant in, Jim, which is usually third down, red zone, situational, two-minute kind of stuff. And I think they're going to be one of the best pass defenses and best run defenses. I really do. They were not very good against the run. I think their front seven is much improved. They have more depth at the D-line than they've had, and I think, in a long time. And so I think this is going to be a special defense this year.
And they got rid of guys that I get the impression you think were weak links, like Malcolm Brown, and they've been replaced. Mike Pennell, I know you're high on. So.
Yeah, Malcolm Brown was just, as far as just kind of the, especially if they're going to play a 3-4 defense, like reports are, and they had a 3-4 front in the Detroit game. The tip of the spear is that nose tackle. You better have a good nose tackle if you're going to be a good 3-4 defense. So I just think Mike Pennell, have you seen that guy? He's solid. He's huge. And they're very high on him. And so I just think they have more depth at D-line. And these linebackers, please. I mean, they're so versatile. All of them, and interchangeable, and you can do a lot. I mean, hell, Jamie Collins was playing a lot of inside linebacker in training camp. He got his first sack playing. I mean, he was playing outside linebacker. So what that does is it creates confusion for the quarterbacks. If you don't know from play to snap, series to series, if Jamie Collins, is he playing inside or is he playing outside on this, it can create so much confusion for the offensive line. If you don't know where the linebackers are, playing from series to series, down to down. And it really creates a lot of confusion. And these guys, what you saw with 9 sacks, what they're very good at, they might not have the best pure just pass rushers. I think Michael Bennett might be the best pure pass rusher they've had here in a long time. Chandler Jones, you called me out yesterday. Besides Chandler Jones. But they're so good at doing 2- and 3-man games, stunts where you twist and you help each other. One guy essentially is helping the other guy get free on a play. They do that a lot. No team's better than the Patriots at twisting and stunning 2- and 3-man games, they call it, like the Patriots. And that was on full display. They already look like they're in midseason form in preseason game number one with all their stunts in their games.
Sean, in Marlboro, what do you make of the Patriots defense on Thursday?
You guys might have to recap what their additions and subtractions. All I can think about is Flowers leaving and adding Bennett on the D-line. But I think overall, and we added Jamie Collins. But I think this defense could be better than last year. I what are your thoughts?
I mean, that's what you've been saying here for a little while now, Ted.
Yeah, I think this defense definitely is going to be better.
Even a guy like John Simon, who they got from the Colts, I think their practice squad or wherever it was late last year, it's like, okay, he's just, a body. It's filler. It's depth. Well, towards the end of the year, he was all right. Actually made a couple of plays, I remember, in the Super Bowl. Yeah. And then Thursday night, he's all over the place.
Right. You know, the Patriots are very good at it. So you can see a player, like you see Derek Rivers. All of a sudden, like, he's been here 3 years, and I know he was injured, so... But he was out there and ball. You see them develop players. Like, players get better when they're in this system a little bit longer. And you just see, like, some guys, they just never get better. They are what they are when they get in the league. But if you're going to come here and they see something in you, they develop you, man. They do, technique-wise, and they know how to put you in the best place to succeed. So you're going to see players get better. And John Simon's a really good example of kind of like, just a guy who steadily, I think, will get better. And I saw John play when he was in Houston. I call him like a poor man's Rob Ninkovich, which is not a bad thing. Yeah. I mean, he's a smart player. He's tough. I think he's more of a backup. But, you need depth at that position for sure.
All right, we haven't even touched on the offensive side of things and the performance from young Jarrett Stidham. We'll get to that along with more of your phone calls. I want to talk about Thursday night's performance, what you saw in the Patriots' dominating win over the Lions. Granted, preseason, but still pretty impressive. 617-779-0985. We'll get to that next here on Gasper Murray with Ted Johnson on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
In motion for the far to the near side comes Dontrell Inman. Shotgun formation. Stidham takes the snap. Has time. Throws over the middle. It is caught by Braxton Berrios. Cuts inside. Gets to the 25-yard line. Another big gain for the Patriots. And another first down. Andrew Adams on the stop for the Lions.
Well, he's impressive. He's way better right now than Jimmy Garoppolo was at this time.
Wow.
Stidham has been really impressive. He's the most accurate rookie passer that I've seen in my 11 years covering the Patriots in training camp. He's physically, he's got the tools. He seems like he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders. I mean, I think Stidham has way, way, way greater potential than I expected when back in April when they took him in the fourth round.
So Jared Stidham went 14-24 for a 179, a touchdown, pass rating of 95.7 in Thursday night's dominating win over the Detroit Lions for the Patriots. And that was Jeff Howell of The Athletic talking him up before that game with Christian Arcand and Adam Jones filling in for Tucker and Rich earlier this week. So, yeah, pretty impressive. Mark and Bolton, what did you make of Jared Stidham's performance on Thursday night?
Yeah, well, I'm a 50-year season ticket holder, and I guarantee you that Bill is going to start Stidham on Saturday. And much to the chagrin of when they pan to the sideline, when they show Brady and Hoyer, I think they're going to look like two guys that are looking to find a place to go to the bathroom. I mean, he's a project for a third-year starter. But, I mean, I just think that he's got what it takes from what I see so far.
Thanks, Mark. What did you see, Ted? What stood out to you with Stidham's performance on Thursday night, if anything?
Yeah, no, I think the first thing is – does he look like he knows what the hell he's doing? Is he in command? Does he get guys lined up? I mean, are there false starts or delay of game penalties? You know, like none of that. Like he was from an operational standpoint, it looked like he knew what he was doing. You know, he just showed poise. Like, you know, early in the when he got in the game, there was he did vacate the pocket because he didn't know where to go with the football. And you go, oh, well, there you go. That is what Jared Stidham, I think, is best kind of known for from a negative aspect coming out of college is his decision making. He does not pull the trigger fast. Now, you have to understand, he had a horrible offensive line at Auburn and probably not the best coaching is kind of what I've read. And so you just wonder, like, that's something to me that's probably hard to work out of a guy is if he's not good at pulling the trigger in college, maybe he's not going to be able to. But in this game, the ball came out fast. For the most part, and he knew where he wanted to go with the football. So that was good. But just poise, composure, command of the huddle, getting guy, you know, just running the operation is really what stood out. And then the play I kind of reference is where I go, man, all right, that's kind of a big boy quarterback play right there. Was he Dontrell Inman, they were inside the 5-yard line.
This is the touchdown.
The touchdown they got called back. He was in shotgun. He saw what the defense was in. He got under center. He changed the protection to the offensive line, yelled out some commands, signaled to the wide receivers to change the play. Boom, hits Dontrell Inman on a slant for what they called a touchdown. They ultimately got called back. But just being able to read the defense, change into another play, get everybody lined up, and still get the playoff before the clock expired, believe it or not, is – kind of an impressive deal for a rookie quarterback playing in his first preseason game. So that's just one example of, look, he's got the tools. A lot of people said besides the fact that he would vacate the pocket a lot of times with perceived pressure that maybe wasn't there, and he needs to stay in there, climb the ladder, if you will, like Tom is like the best at, is also his accuracy. But he threw some accurate footballs. I mean,
two of his best got dropped by Maurice Harris. That was
dimes. Yeah. I mean, dimes. And those fade routes. One was a 9 route on the left side that Maurice Harris dropped. The other one was the 9 route on the right side that Maurice Harris dropped. There were absolute dimes. I think it was him, or maybe Brian Hoyer hit Lacoste over the middle from that seam. I can't remember. But there was a lot of just passes. I mean, he threw out routes. He threw fade routes. He threw 9 routes that – were very much where they needed to be.
Yeah, it didn't look like his brain was going 1,000 miles an hour like it did, or often does for young quarterbacks, when they, even if they're seeing first action in a preseason game. So I was impressed with that, you know, the confidence, the command of the whole thing, of the offense as a whole. I was impressed with Stidham, because I thought what we've been hearing about him was a little bit curious in terms of the timing after the news of Tom Brady's contract extension. Like, oh, Stidham has looked so good at camp. Like, all right, everybody calm down. The wide receivers, Jacoby Myers, who had a great game. N'Keal Harry, who looked really good in a couple of plays before he pulled up lame. Who stood out to you there, and anything else in terms of the offense?
Yeah, Jacoby Myers was, look, I was excited to see this kid play because of all the things I've heard in practice. He's been flashing in practice. I love that he basically carried over into the game what he's been doing in practice. I mean, the kid looked good, and what I was really impressed with, Jim, was how physical he was at the line of scrimmage. The biggest challenge for wide receivers from college to NFL is the physicality at the line of scrimmage. They're not used to playing a lot of man jam kick coverage, and so a lot of these guys, these rookie receivers, they shy away from physical contact. Jacoby was, if you saw, he was hand jousting a lot at the line of scrimmage to fight to get open. Now, he's not going to get a ton of separation, but if he can do little things like just the head jerk, being able to get guys' hands off of him and creating a little bit of space and separation. He was doing all those things. He showed he was a physical, tough kid. And you saw a lot of perimeter runs, and he's blocking downfield. It's like, okay, this kid gets it. Like, he gets it.
Even on one of Stidham's worst throws of the night, that was to Myers, right sideline near the end zone. It was two inside, should have been outside. And Myers essentially becomes a defensive back and slaps the ball away. That one, too, is like, oh, this kid's pretty good. He knows what the hell's going on.
That's an excellent example of what I'm talking about. Just played really smart, I thought. And real, one thing about N'Keal Harry, too, is even though he's not a burner, the one thing that jumped out when you saw him play was, holy cow, this guy's huge. Like, he's a monster. Yeah. He's a thoroughbred, all right? And so I was just impressed by his sheer size. And he's not going to be a guy that maybe he's going to blow by. He doesn't need to because of how big he is. He can box you out. He's got a huge catch radius. His hands are massive. He can jump up and catch the ball. That second pass to him, he caught two balls. One was an out route. And then the other one was
third and 10, I think.
Yep. The other one was what they call a back shoulder throw. The old back shoulder throw is the most difficult pass to defend. It's indefensible. You can't defend it. All right. And you saw Tom and Josh Gordon try to execute that play a lot last year, and they just couldn't do it on a consistent basis. You saw N'Keal Harry catch this back shoulder throw in the game the other night, and I was like, oh my gosh, if Tom and him can get on the same page with that, you won't be able to stop that. And it's basically just a seam route, a straight line route, where he throws it on the back shoulder and the defender's upfield, and he can't recover to come back and get it. You leap up, you jump up, catch that sucker, come down for a completion. You saw N'Keal Harry do that. I think him and Tom are going to get on the same page with that particular play and be deadly with it.
How do you think they should handle him, though, in terms of this hamstring thing, which, you know, as you know, like, it can be one of the more nagging type of injuries? It's just, I kind of hate to see that because it's something he's been dealing with at camp. He pulls up lame after a few plays on Thursday night, and it's just like, because they need this kid this year.
Yeah,
they're
going to
need him to produce.
Yeah, and so I would be very, very careful with that. I think a lot of times coaches, they want to see what they got. Is this kid tough? If there's any question around toughness, they will push a guy with an injury to see what they can get out of him. Has Bill ever drafted a wide receiver in the first round?
No.
Ever?
First
no.
First time.
So let's be smart about it. And hamstrings are one of those deals where it can be lingering if you don't take care of it, and it can last a long time. And we've seen that time and time again. So you hope that's okay, because I think this is a guy that can really come in and have immediate impact. I mean, they need him in the red zone. He didn't catch a lot of red zone touchdowns last year at Arizona State, but that doesn't mean in this offense he can't. There's a huge, huge, huge loss with Gronk retiring, particularly in the passing game in the red zone, and you hope that a guy like N'Keal Harry can kind of pick up the slack there.
From Tom Brady's contract extension to your thoughts on Thursday night's preseason dominating win over the Detroit Lions, your Patriots call is coming up next after the Sports Hub headlines with Sean Silver here on Gasper Murray.
Yeah. Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Chris out today. Ted Johnson in his spot. And you at 617-779-0985. Been Patriots heavy here for the first hour and a half of the show. Gonna go to Missy in the car. Wants to talk about the Patriots defense on Thursday night. Hey, Missy.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
And I want to say a big fan, Ted. So
well,
I think
you.
You're awesome. And I also, and I hope you guys just give me maybe a little over a minute. But
yeah, go ahead.
You know, I want to thank Ted. Your wife did some volunteer work. This is Ted Johnson. I don't remember her first name, but years ago in Hopkinton, when I was a little, you know, down and out, I just want to say, and I just want to thank her very much. This was a little over 10 years ago, and she was such a lovely, lovely person. I'm sure she still is, but I just wanted to say that and thank her for what she did and some other Patriots' wives.
Oh, that's cool. Missy, just not to burst your bubble, I am not married anymore. I've been divorced for a long time.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. But yeah, just to set the record, I've been divorced much. Gosh, 8, 9, 10 years now. But regardless, thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I just really appreciate all that you did out there for the Pats, and I think that you guys, your show's awesome too. And you know, I wanted to just touch base, and I hope I don't get too upset about some of the stuff. And I know sometimes it's media generated. Tom Brady. I come from a family. I know I am a woman, and I never played football. But you know, my dad used to work in the NFL, and that was mostly I think late 70s, I think it was late 70s, but I definitely know throughout all of the 80s. And I also have family members, a former head coach in the NFL, and a coordinator right now. I'm not going to say who these people are, but and I certainly am not a know-it-all. But I know football, and you know, we've been season ticket holders for almost 40 years for the Pats. So before they, started to have success. But I'm mentioning all that because Tom Brady is phenomenal, and we all know this. But I don't know if people realize that he only had Randy Moss, a star receiver, for 2 years of his whole career. And that's not also going to. I'm not trying to downplay.
You just think, Missy,
out there.
Missy, what's the bigger point? Like, you don't think he's had enough weapons, or
the bigger point is that I can't believe just sometimes how he's treated, and I'm talking about like his contract. And some of the stuff that he does have to go through that even recently, Alex Guerrero, he can't be allowed, like on the sideline and this and that. And then what happened even a little further back with Garoppolo. And I'm also a huge fan of Belichick. These guys are phenomenal, and I know it takes a team. But I'm just really, really upset that this stuff, some of the stuff is coming up again.
Yeah, Missy, and thanks for the call. You're not alone. It's come to the point here, after all the accomplishments, and this second half of his career, or at least the last like 5 or 6 years, where he's been completely rejuvenated, and a lot of that has to do with them drafting Jimmy Garoppolo, and these recent titles, I would think, with him still playing at a high level, Ted, that they would also look at his, as a franchise, they would look at his dream of wanting to play into his perhaps mid-40s. Or at least the next few years, and give him the security of the years. And they haven't done that. And so I think fans are rightfully a little bit miffed about that. And certainly sounds like Tom Brady is.
Yeah.
It's at this point, like, I don't know, hadn't he earned it?
That's what you would think. And I think most people would say at this point, and that's what Tom thinks, right? I think that's Tom is also has this feeling of, man, what else do I have to do?
What's it going
to
take?
To get you to kind of basically play along with me or understand that I want to play for a few more years, but you're not willing to go along with that with me. Like you're nickel and diming me. You're setting a ceiling on how long you want me here with the contracts when I feel like I've earned the benefit of the doubt on this thing. And I think most people would say the same thing. It's like, and I kind of get it, and particularly you got to look at the history of contract negotiations with Tom. He's never really ever come close to being the highest or the second or even the third highest, I think, quarterback in the NFL, right? I mean, And so he's just kind of like...
In 2010, when he ultimately signed that deal right before the season started, I think he was like a minute.
Okay, right, all right. But the bigger point is that he typically doesn't get contracts that are commensurate for what his talent level is, right?
Yeah.
So I just think he's at a point where it's like, you know what? I don't know what else I had to do. And it's his way, the franchise, taking the franchise tag out of there and the transition tag out of there, that's his way of saving face. It's kind of getting some control back of the situation. You know, that's what that says to me. And so it's just funny. Like, you know, and I think you know, probably Tom is kind of like, you know, after they win the Super Bowl with Bill, they hug. I love you. I mean, I know that's on NFL film somewhere, right? We were talking about this yesterday with Jimmy Stewart. It's like, oh, I love you, man. I love you.
And caught up in the moment.
And then, yes. And then you think, okay, like, we're back. We're back. You know? I mean, the Philadelphia Super Bowl, that's gone. Boom. We just won. Yes. And wait, you're going to play hardball. Wait, you're going to offer me the same incentive package that you did last year? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's insulting.
That's probably what upset him the most. It was the report is that the Patriots initially in their contract negotiations with Tom this summer recently offered him the exact same incentive package that they offered him last year that he accepted, which he hit none of. And the incentive packages, a lot of times, there's so much of that is so out of your control. And so Tom probably was like, that was probably the last straw for him. That was their initial offer, was really the same incentive package last year. You know, it's going to be hard to attain that based on the way this offense is set up.
All right, without Rob Gronkowski, right.
So
at left
he probably yeah. So he's probably like, screw it. You know, I'm gonna ask for this. And you know what? Part of me wonders, Jim, if he's a little bit shocked or hurt or bummed out that they were willing to put that in there. Like, it's almost like, all right, yeah, you don't want to be franchised? Fine, we'll put that in there. What, you will? You know?
Yeah.
So it's very, there's a very complex dynamic kind of thing going on here.
Jack in the car on Tom Brady. Hey, Jack.
Hey, I just want to say that I think that Brady, all through his career, has helped us so much by not taking the most amount of money. And I think you guys are putting too much of the emphasis on the money. I think he's got all he needs. And I think that his main thing is to win the Super Bowl one more time. I think he's out at the end of this year, no matter what happens, unless he had just an enormous year and didn't win the Super Bowl, there's a possibility. But he's now 43 years old, and I think the Patriots are extremely smart to give him only the 1 year at a time now. He's 43. We don't want to get into this long-term contracts at 43 years old.
It's 42, and thanks for the call, Jack. And yeah, and so that part I actually agree with. So in a lot of ways, I think that this motivates Tom Brady. You'll probably get him at a MVP level again this year, because it's one of these things, like any perceived slight or any slight like this. And I think the way he's talked about it, he looks at this contract fake extension as a slight. It motivates them. It motivates him. It lights a fire under his ass. So that part I agree with. Again, the question to me, or could question rather to any of these people like Jack, or think that he's going to retire, if he has a season like that, and he's still playing at a high level, at 401 at the end of the league year, when Team X calls Tom Brady and offers him $40 million guaranteed, and he goes back to the Patriots and gives them first right of refusal, what do you think they're going to do? I don't think they're going to pay him. And he still thinks he wants to play? So the possibility, yes, is there, as a free agent, he can take his services elsewhere. And then what? That's my question to you. 617-779-0985. More Patriots calls coming up on our long commercial-free segment. I want to touch on a couple of Red Sox-related things as well. Mookie Betts sounds like he could be shipped out this coming offseason. At least the Red Sox are going to take calls on that. We will get to that coming up in our final hour of Gasper Murray with Ted Johnson here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ted Johnson in for Chris Gasper today on Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Very Patriots heavy today. Thank God. Thank God football's back. I just got to say that as an aside. Like, with this interminable Red Sox season with this mostly disappointing team. Bogaerts has been great. Devers has been great. But, like, oh, God, I've been so desperate for this. Oh, I really have. I know it's kind of fake football. It's preseason football. But I'm just so happy it's back. Oh, God.
It's awesome because this is a town that when I, and I've mentioned this before, when I started doing radio here on the Sports Hub a few months ago, that you know, the landscape, the sports landscape has changed so much since I got drafted in 1995. Like, it was, I mean, the Patriots were not nearly, obviously, I mean, it was, if you were to rate all the teams, I would say it was by far Red Sox.
Oh, definitely.
By far. And then I think Celtics and Bruins were kind of like sharing the second spot, but the Patriots were, I think, last as far as fandom and fervor for excitement of on that. And so now it's completely flipped. It's the Patriots by far, or in the NFL, is by far the most kind of popular you know, team in town. And it's great. Great for me, obviously, but it's so interesting to see. And I just, all the programming, the nightly programming dedicated to just the Patriots during the football season is unbelievable to me compared to what it was even when I retired in 2005. It is, I mean, it's what people want to listen to. It's what people talk about. The programming dedicated to it is, and the marketing around the team is like 100 times more than ever was even when I retired after three Super Bowls in 2005. It's remarkable, and but it's a great game. It's a great game, and we're witnessing something in this town that will never ever be duplicated again.
Oh yeah, never. No, and never. A lot of it is part of the with no offense to you and your great play and a lot of your teammates. A lot of it, as I like to refer to, as the Brady Industrial Complex. So if he retires after this year or goes to another team, oh, the reckoning's coming. Yeah. I'll tell you right now, I'm ready to go back to wait tables. Believe you me. Mike and Woburn, you are next here on Gaspar Murray with Ted Johnson. Hey, Mike.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing? Hey, Ty got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and rightly so. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to his speech, Ted, but I wanted to ask you a question. He made a point to thank Ron Borges because of the way that the induction process in the Pro Football Hall of Fame is structured. I have a huge problem with a guy like Ty Law having to basically be sponsored for country club membership by a writer who's never stepped on a football field in his life. Mm-hmm. No other Hall of Fame has a process that's like pledging Delta House to get into the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You've got this cabal of writers that meet once a year for their like little, you know, rush drive to see who gets in or not. There's no accountability with it. And I feel like guys, and I know we've talked about guys like Lorenzo Neal before, who I think should get in, and I feel like he's penalized because he never stayed in one particular place long enough to have like a writer to like sort of adopt him and sponsor him, or guys that were prickly with the press. Like I'll make two guys that stick out in my mind are Corey Dillon and Ricky Waters, the guys who weren't easy to deal with for the media. But a darling like Jerome Bettis, who I thought had benefited by being a team mascot for the last 5 years of his career, padding his stats, getting in on getting a championship when he wasn't the main back, sort of is paraded because he's a darling of the media. And I think that whole process just drives me crazy that guys that aren't part of the game on the field have such a handle as to who gets in or not, and there's no accountability whatsoever. I mean, does Lorenzo Neal have to give a honey baked ham to somebody for the carving station to get into the Hall of Fame?
It's so funny. I'm the biggest, you bring up Lorenzo Neal, I'm the biggest Lorenzo Neal fan. Like, but unfortunately, he played a position, fullback, that's not a highly decorated, it's not a position that people give a lot of
He should be in, Steve Tasker should be in, but a lifetime special teamer.
There's so many, like Alan Faneca, are you kidding me? Like, he's like three or four time our first team All-Pro. His resume, Alan Faneca, you look at Zach Thomas's resume, it is like, one of the things I always look at when it comes to Hall of Fame consideration is the All-Pro. How many times were you All-Pro? All-Pro is like, I mean, you're like, you're the best of your best position. Yeah. And if you're there like four or five times and you're not a Hall of Famer, there's something wrong with that. Lorenzo Neal came into the league 2 years before me and retired 5 years after I retired. Like, from 1993 to 2009, Lorenzo Neal played football. Like, that is unbelievable. But to get to your bigger point, that's how it works in the Hall of Fame. John McClain, we were talking about John McClain down here that covers the Texans. He's in there always pushing for his guys. That's kind of how it is. It's a process that it's a lot of the times the local beat writers, the guys that covered these players on these teams. They're on these committees. They go to the Hall of Fame every year, and they pitch their guy. And so if you don't have support from a local writer that covered you while you played, if you're questionable at all, you're a bubble guy, and if it's one of those deals where you need to be lobbied for and you don't have a guy to lobby for you, then chances are you are not getting in. So that maybe is a flaw with the process, but that's the way it's been. Forever.
It's politics, man. Yep. And each and every one of us in some aspect of our lives, no matter what we do for a living, has to get those knee pads at some point. And sure, a little bit of your soul dies a little bit when you have to do that and get out those knee pads and get on your knees to do what you have to do. But it's what we have to do. You don't want to kill the golden goose, right? You don't want to kill a good thing. You think I want to be talking, you know, Red Sox Orioles every single day? No. Part of me dies every single day with that. But I don't want to kill the golden goose. You know who's killing the golden goose, though, a little bit right now in the NFL? That would be Antonio Brown. Talk about trying to kill a good thing. What the hell are you doing? This lunatic. I want to touch on this story coming up along with more of your Patriots-related phone calls. We'll try to stay football-heavy here. It's Gaspar Murray with Ted Johnson. We got an hour to go here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.